that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. My guest this week is Matt Babcock. Matt is the owner and founder and NBA draft analyst at Babcock Hoops and Pro Insight Talent Evaluators. Matt is a former NBA agent, and you can read about his life and times in that business over at his website, babcockhoops.com. and at sportsillustrated.com. The best way to engage with Matt is via his Twitter, which is at Matt Babcock, B-A-B-C-O-C-K, and then the number 1111. Our conversation centered around the next stars and those players and who could potentially get drafted ahead of, behind, or in between the likes of LaMelo Ball, RJ Hampton, and the somewhat forgotten Southeast Melbourne Phoenix next star, Terry Armstrong. So those names we've heard in the media, perhaps haven't watched intimately play, but I've heard those names. So Anthony Edwards, Jason Wiseman, Cole Anthony and such. So Matt gives greater context to who they are and where they sit in relation to LaMelo Ball and Hampton and others. We also spoke about being a sports agent and representing an American player and dealing with the NBL. So that's sort of a narrative we haven't really heard before. And Matt also gives insight into the future of the Next Stars program in the face of the quote-unquote impending age reduction of the NBA draft. He has an interesting insight into that, and he's not so sure that the NBL's Next Stars program should be so worried in the immediate future. And then we also spoke about his thoughts on the talent of another Australian in the draft, Josh Green, what he thinks about him coming out of Arizona. Thanks very much, everyone. I hope you enjoy this episode, and thank you.
Matt, I'd like you to, just for people listening, could you introduce yourself, how you became a sports agent, draft analyst? Tell us about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, sure. You know, long story short, you know, I was born into a basketball family. My family's worked in the NBA since the late 70s. You know, so I was literally born with a basketball in my hand, and you know, always thought I was going to be a player, which I was through college. And then I thought I'd get into coaching or scouting, which I did. But then I, you know, kind of fell into some jobs working in the agency business, and next thing I knew, I'd done it for over 10 years. Over the course of the last 2-3 years of that, just sort of, it started eating at me a little bit that I wasn't doing, you know, a job that was directly related in basketball. So I decided to make a kind of a dramatic, you know, shift in my career, and, got out of the agency business and started scouting. And one thing led to another. I'm, you know, started doing media and scouting and doing some consulting behind the scenes. And so now I'm doing a lot of basketball stuff, and that's sort of, you know, again, the long story short.
I was going to say, with going back to your agency days, you see it depicted on television. It's very cut, very aggressive, very kind of wheeling and dealing, silver tongued. Is that the case, or is there, or did you find that there's a different side to it?
You know, I mean, there's a lot of sides to that business. I mean, I think, you know, the negatives that are well documented are really there. I mean, there's, you know, it starts at the high school level. I mean, there's a layer cake of, you know, the recruiting process to, you know, kids going to school, to signing agents, to deciding which shoe company they're to sign with. And, you know, agents are a part of that. Yeah. So, I mean, it's cutthroat. It's big business. It gets a little hairy.
Let's jump on. Let's look at what prospects we've got in the NBL that are looking to jump to the NBA. They're well-known names. Actually, before we do that, let's look at your experience of the NBL. So you're living in the United States, you're an agent, you're a long time. What was your impression of the NBL back when you were in 2006 and that? What was your impression of the NBL at that time? What is your impression of the NBL now? Is it part of the sort of conversation over there?
You know, it's certainly evolved. I mean, I think with their new program of bringing these top high school kids over, I mean, the media attention it's generated is on a whole another level. From a business standpoint, from a former agent's business standpoint, the way I always saw that league is that we were intrigued by it for American players. You know, the primary language is English. It's a nice place to live. The basketball is really good. The problem is that it seemed as if the teams wanted high level players without matching the pay. And so what would happen is we'd get into extended conversations with a lot of teams, and we would get higher deals in various markets. And so with me personally, I ended up not doing a ton of business in Australia. And it wasn't, you know, I never really planned to be like, all right, I don't like Australia. That's not going to happen. It just sort of always, you know, seemed to play out that way, that we just decided to go somewhere else. But I think in recent years, I mean, with this, what's it called? Next Stars program.
Next Stars program. That's right.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think they've really put themselves on the map, you know, as far as, you know, getting some, you know, big names in there and, you know, generating some attention and, you know, another, you know, kind of backtracking here a little bit, going back to placing American players there. You know, one issue I did have, and it wasn't a huge issue, but it was sort of part of the equation when we're making decisions on teams, is you know, Australia's secluded pretty good, and mm-hmm. you know, when we're placing a guy, you know, whether it's in the G League or you know, entry level in NBA or in Europe, you know, I always look at it as a stepping stone. You know, your first job is always leading to the next, and with Australia, you know, with it being somewhat secluded, I didn't feel like it was heavily scouted by other teams. You know, for a guy going to Australia, right. chances are probably need to go to Europe. And I don't know, European guys, general managers and team owners, you know, generally speaking, look at, okay, what have you done? Where have you done it? If it's not the NBA, it better be in Europe. Otherwise, we're not taking it seriously. And that's whether that's right or wrong. I mean, that's not my argument there. But it's that was one reason I, you know, didn't aggressively pursue deals in Australia.
What do you think of, here's my question, what do you think about the NBL as a talent incubator? Actually, like, what is the impression of the standard of coaching, the standard of play, the standard of player that comes through it? Does that ring any bells over there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's a very credible league. I think the coaching's great. I think the you know, there's a lot of local talent. And it's known to be a pretty tough league. I mean, if you're going there, you're playing in a big boys league and it's physical. And from my perspective, the basketball level is well respected.
From an agent standpoint, you spoke about how often you ended up dealing with Europe. Europe's got its own complications. I've read a number of books about contracts, funny stuff with contracts and things like that. Is that ever a playing on your mind in Europe? I mean, Australia's a much safer bet in that respect, but even still, you found yourself going through that European route.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, wheeling and dealing going on in Europe.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I mean, it goes back to there's just so many teams in Europe, though, so the upside is higher. But, I mean, there's other markets, too. I mean, some of these Asian leagues have really moved up as well. I mean, the landscape of international basketball has changed quite a bit since I first got in. You know, and like we said, Australia is, you know, certainly a part of that too.
If you had a high school client, let's say an RJ Hampton, would you encourage them to go to the NBL, or do you still see great merit in the Division I schools and college?
You know, I actually get asked this quite a bit, and I do think it is a great option. I think every kid that's 18 years old, 19 years old, is, you know, in a unique situation. Every kid's, you know, matures a little bit differently, has different things to address to kind of get to the next point of being drafted at a high level. So, I mean, I think it's a great option. I wouldn't say just a blanket statement like every high school kid that's got a chance to play in the NBA should do it. But I think it's something that is, you know, a valid option for sure.
I think it really depends on it's a different conversation for someone like LaMelo Ball, RJ Hampton, who are picked in that top 10. It's a very different conversation for a player of a Terry Armstrong, who's perhaps not ranked as highly, doesn't come with the gravitas. So you're very right when you say it's a multi-layered conversation. Let's jump onto the NBL guys and what you think of their game and how that's going to transition into this 2020 draft. LaMelo Ball, blanket question, what do you like about his game?
Well, he's got great positional size. He's got a great feel for the game, and he's extremely skilled. I think they're trying to list him at 6'7". I don't know if I'm necessarily buying that, but he has got good size. I think he's, you know, about 6'6". Mm-hmm. And really sees the floor. He's got deep range on his shot. And like I say, he's got a knack to make plays, which, you know, his strengths certainly translate to the NBA very well.
What don't you like about his game?
You know, I think physically, he needs to get stronger, which he has started to fill out a little bit. I don't know if that's work he's putting in or he's just naturally maturing. But he's, you know, physical strength, you know, needs to improve. Defensively, mm-hmm. I think he's just okay, which I think it's part of his physical limitations. He's not an overly athletic player. I think he's more coordinated and skilled. and just sort of, you know, a crafty player rather than, you know, a blow by you type guy, which actually is what RJ Hampton is. But yeah, so I mean, his physical limitations bug me a little bit, which affects his defense.
What about the jump shot style? Both those brothers have come through the game with that sort of style, and it's been, it has, at this point in time, it hasn't been particularly effective for either player. Is that a concern?
You know, I actually think I think LaMelo is a good shooter. I think the problem is his shot selection. I think naturally he's a better shooter than his brother was at this same stage. He needs to mature as a player a little bit, and I think it's more of he's kind of created some bad habits of playing somewhat flashy and playing quote unquote hero ball. I think, once he sort of, matures and kind of calms down a little bit and makes the easy plays, I think his shooting percentages will go, significantly up.
Here's a question, like the things surrounding him, you've got obviously the huge, his father, LaVar, who's a huge media personality. He's got his brother who's in the NBA. Where do you see him sitting within that sort of, if you can call it a circus or that sort of interesting dynamic around him as a person? Do you think that worries off teams? Does that worry you? What do you think?
You know, if you would ask me this, a year ago or even 6 months ago, it was a big concern. And, he'd been overexposed to me in the sense that, he was immature. I mean, he came off as, somewhat of a spoiled brat, for a couple of years. And I think he's starting to grow out of that. I think, the stuff that's, kind of shook up with the Big Baller Brand and their dad, they hired CAA, which is a big, powerful agency. It seems like there's some stability set in place. And I think combination of him just getting a little bit older, figuring things out on his own and surrounding himself with, some experienced professionals. I think everything's definitely going in the right direction. To say that it's not a concern at all, I think it is. I mean, teams are certainly going to do a lot of digging. I mean, they are now, but, once we get into the pre-draft process, I think there's going to be a lot of questions be asked and, about his background, his personality. But it seems as if everything is going in the right direction significantly.
You have LaMelo Ball on your mock draft on your website. You have LaMelo Ball going third to the Cleveland Cavaliers. ESPN have him at the present, last I checked, which was last night, first to the Knicks. Why do you have him at third, and why do you think ESPN has him at one?
Well, I mean, one thing to note on my mock draft is that it's not rankings. It's what I do is I simulate the draft. And so on the day that I do it, I update the order and I go team by team, and I kind of put myself in the shoes of the general manager, and I make a pick, and I do that 1 to 60. And so with LaMelo specifically, I have him in my first tier of players, which is and not necessarily in this order, but James Wiseman, Edwards, Anthony Edwards, and LaMelo. And so when I did the mock draft, I'm looking at it right now. The Knicks, Warriors, and Cavs. And so it was a little bit, team by team, who made sense. Right. Actually, Cleveland really doesn't make that much sense for LaMelo since they drafted two point guards the last 2 years. However, I just have a hard time seeing LaMelo slip out of the top three. I mean, I think realistically, if that were to end up being the order, there'd probably be, a lot of rumors that pick would be moved. Or those players would be moved to make room for LaMelo. So, but I think as far as, how I see LaMelo and how I see RJ for that matter, I think I align with Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz pretty evenly.
Right. A question I had further down my list, but we may as well bring it up now, is how big is that question of when a player or a team is drafting a player, a GM decides on best talent available or fit? How's that been in the past, and how do you see that playing out in the 2020 draft? Do you think it's going to be more leaning towards best available or fit?
I think every team is completely different. Every general manager is different. Right. My personal philosophy with it is I'm not a big believer in taking the best player available. And the reason for that is a couple of things. Is one, I think teams should value continuity. I don't think they should set up their team looking to make moves. I think you should look to draft players and sign players that you want to be a part of your program and develop them as a team. Right. And that goes with your staff too. I mean, just continuity is very important in professional sports, and it's you know, it's not really put in place enough. So that's one part of it. And then also too, if a player doesn't get a proper opportunity, I don't see him developing properly either. And so, I mean, just because you're taking, you know, the highest talent, if it's not going to be developed, it's going to be a waste of a pick. And so I think there needs to be a little bit more of a balance of, okay, you know, once you get to a certain point, you know, you need to look at you know, the talent levels and the upside, but you need to make sure that they fit in what you're doing just so they have a chance to develop their confidence and, you know, have a chance to play.
Makes sense. Let's jump to RJ Hampton, who's playing for the New Zealand Breakers. Blanket question, what do you like about his game?
You know, he's got great athleticism. I mean, he's so fast. He's so quick. He's a quick twitch athlete. And, you know, I mean, when you're looking at guys that have upside, you know, athleticism is probably the number one thing. Obviously positional size is important as well, but I mean, he's got the star level, physical tools. And so that's the main thing I like about him.
The physical tools. What don't you like about his game?
You know, he's definitely developing pretty well, and he's you know, it seems like it's been a little up and down this year, but he's progressing, which is really nice to see. But I think the big issue with him is that, you know, I think they list him at 6'5". He's probably more of a 6'3", 6'4" guy, yes. And he's more of a shooting guard right now rather than a point guard. He does some nice things on the ball, but I think he's a little bit of ways away from being the primary point guard of an NBA team. And so, I mean, he's a little bit of a project from that standpoint. I think that's the concern. And with that said, I think he's a little bit more of a high risk, high reward type prospect, you know, compared to LaMelo, who's probably a little bit more NBA ready.
Makes sense. You have him going 8th to the Bulls, or you have the Bulls. If you're a general manager with that cap on, you'd have them selecting him. ESPN think he's sort of a 5th draft. Why do you have him at the Bulls? Why do you think they have him 5th going to the Hawks?
You know, I mean, after those top three, he's in that next group of guys. I think I've got another, you know, 8-9 guys in that next tier. And again, it just goes back to team by team. I mean, with Chicago, you know, it's not, you know, he's not necessarily a perfect fit there, but at 8, you know, I kind of felt he would be a high value pick at that slot.
Terry Armstrong, let's jump over to him. He's playing for the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. He was drafted, he was touted or ranked quite highly out of high school. I think the 40th top prospect. He's not on your board. He's not on ESPN's board. My question is, have you heard of him? Did you see his game out of high school? And if so, why isn't he on your board? Or do you not like him or what have you?
Yeah, no, I've seen him. If I remember correctly, I saw him at the Allen Iverson Classic, which is like a high school all-star camp this last summer. And I'm very familiar with him. He was committed to going to my school. I played at University of Arizona. And, you know, I saw him, and some of the guys that work with me have seen him. Just, you know, not a bad player. Hasn't shown me anything to get me real excited. I mean, I know he's a pretty good athlete for a swing man. Just didn't seem to have a ton to his game. I mean, if we're talking about on NBA terms, I was certainly surprised when he decommitted and announced he was going pro.
There was an academic thing going on. I think I haven't read up on it fully, but there was a where you didn't quite meet grade. So I had to do a second set of classes. There's a lot of rules with the NCAA that I'm not totally around, but
sure.
There was an element. Yeah.
I didn't know that, but that sounds about right. But yeah, no, he's you know, his name doesn't seem to be buzzing. You know, we haven't talked about him a whole lot. I don't expect him to get drafted. But you know, actually probably brings up a good question. I probably should do a little bit more homework on him.
Yeah. Well, he just hasn't played. I mean, he's come to Australia. He's played 1 minute. He's sat out most games, DNP, coach's decision. There's been some injuries early on, but injuries in quotations. It just hasn't quite happened. So my thought is if he's not playing here, that's obviously not a good sign to draft experts over there.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's jump on. What can you tell me about the potential prospects that could be picked above and around and or below Ball and Hampton in that sort of top 10? And we hear these names over here, but I mean, I watch a little bit of college myself, but I haven't seen a lot of it. Tell me about Anthony Edwards and speak to like why he would be a better idea than the guys in the NBL, Ball and Hampton.
Yeah, you know, Anthony Edwards is a pretty interesting prospect. I just had a chance to spend several days evaluating him at the Maui Invitational, and he was the first day he struggled. Second day against Michigan State, which is a top team, he went off. He had 33 points in the second half, 37 total. He's got big time player upside. He's sort of he's not even close to being a finished product. I mean, sort of some of the things that I talked about with LaMelo. He plays a little bit of hero ball, you know, making mm-hmm. you know, trying to make the tough play rather than the easy play and just utilizing his talent. So he needs to increase his basketball IQ and just, you know, total understanding of the game. But his raw talent and his physical tools, he's really built like an American football player. He's 6'5", 225, really strong, really athletic, and then he's got an ability to hit shots from you know, really long range. You know, he's got upside. He's kind of like maybe a mix, and if all you know, progresses properly, sort of a mix between Dwayne Wade and James Harden. That's kind of kind of style of play. Not saying he's going to be quite that good. I mean, he could be.
That style, I get you.
But it's just he's a strong guard, but he's got the kind of difficult shot making ability like Harden. He's probably got the most talent in the draft. Not saying that he's going to be the number one pick, but he's probably has the most upside.
Where do you have him on your mock draft?
Currently to the Knicks at number one. He's like I mentioned, he's in that top three. So it sort of depends on who's picking and that sort of thing.
James Wiseman, tell me about him.
He's just a big dude. He's 7'1". He's really starting to fill out physically. So he's 7'1". He's strong. He moves well. And he's just got a well-rounded skill set for a guy his size. I mean, this guy shoots threes, shot blocker, rebounder, finisher at the rim, runs the floor pretty well. I really like him. I think he's you know, probably the safest pick of those three. I mean, I think at the worst, he's going to be a legitimate starting center day one. And, you know, it doesn't seem to have, you know, quite the personality to be a superstar. But I think he's going to be really good.
The other guys on this list, I've got a number of names. Like, who's the next sort of the guy you most like in this next list? I can't pronounce some of these names. Denny Abugija. OB. Who's the next one? Who's the next?
Yeah, Denny Abugija. So he's player from Israel. He's really interesting. He's 6'9", small forward. He's sort of like a point forward. You know, will lead the break. Great passer. Just overall skill set. I wish he shot the ball a little bit better. But regardless, he's definitely in that mix of being the next, you know, next one of the next names called after that first group. And then I've got Obi Toppin, who's a really interesting case. He plays at Dayton, which is a little bit of a smaller school, but they're ranked high right now. And he's older. He's 21. He's a redshirt sophomore. And he's kind of a mix between the comparisons I have for him, a mix between Kyle Kuzma and Amari Stoudemire. And he's just 6'9", long, super athletic, shoots from outside. I mean, high flyer. He's very, very good. And then there's a number of guards in this year's draft. I really like Nico Mannion, point guard from Arizona, sort of a mix between Luke Ridnour and Steve Nash. They got Cole Anthony at Carolina, who unfortunately is hurt. I'm supposed to watch him this weekend, but he's hurt. And Greg Anthony's son, he's had a big year so far. He's not necessarily my favorite player, but he's talented. And so I think somebody will take him pretty high. And then we got a couple other, European kids. Killian Hayes is a combo guard that's playing in Germany right now. Theo Maladon's a French point guard. Pretty good draft at the top end of things.
The guy that Australians are going to want to ask about is Josh Green, who's at your alma mater, Arizona, I believe. Your thoughts on his game?
Yeah, I like Josh. You know, I've seen Josh a bunch. Tough kid. Really good athlete. I don't know if he necessarily has quite as much upside as the names we mentioned before, but I like him. I think he's a probable first round pick. I kind of see him as just a tough defender, finisher in transition. Offensively, he's not special in one single thing, but he's pretty well rounded. He does everything enough. You know, handles the ball well enough. Passes the ball right, shoots okay, not any like major deficiencies, But not, you know, not any like anything that's special either. But I do like him. I think he's going to be a really good NBA player.
Let's jump back to the NBL guys. Both Ball and Hampton are out long term over this sort of Christmas period. Each have missed a game. They're set to miss maybe 3 or 4 weeks. So another, you know, 3 or 4 games. It did coincide with both of them reaching pretty high in the ESPN mock drafts. My question to you would be, would it be likely that someone's given them a tap on the shoulder and said, you know what, your draft stock's pretty high. Why don't you just sort of shut you down for a bit? I know it's not one of my questions I've got for you, but do you think that's a possibility? Do you think that would be a smart strategy?
It's definitely a possibility. I made some calls to you know, both guys' circles to check in on that. And with LaMelo, I was told that he is absolutely not shutting it down. Doesn't mean it's true, but if it is, I'm gonna have to call my guy again and give him some hell. Okay. With RJ, I haven't done quite as much digging on that. It's certainly a possibility. You know, I mean, for me personally, you know, I'm one to promote players to play. You know, sort of a if you think you deserve more than what you're guaranteed right now, play for it, earn it. And you know, with both these guys, nothing's set in stone. I mean, neither one of them are set to be the number one pick in the draft, and I think both of them think they deserve it. So, with that said, you know, hey, play basketball, you know, and that's just my personal preference. I know there's a number of agents that give the advice of you know, playing it safe, and if your market's at a certain level, you know, maybe slow it down or shut it down. So it's definitely a possibility.
Do you think from a sort of more from a structural or just ease of watching these players, do you think playing in the NBL, playing in a totally different time zone? I mean, here we are, you're a day in the past as we're speaking to me, you know what I mean? So do you think that playing in the NBL so far removed, do you think that's created a bit of mystery and improved their stock or ultimately diminished it because there's not that ease of access?
I think with these guys specifically, it's worked out pretty well. I could see it being an issue for a guy that's not rated quite as highly. I mean, I think there would be, right. There could possibly be teams that wouldn't want to make the trip. And, you know, because of that, they probably get a little bit of lack of exposure. Hasn't seemed to be an issue with either one of these guys. I will say this is not necessarily your question, but it sort of relates to it is, you know, with American kids coming out of high school, you know, there's such hype surrounding these kids. There's, you know, all kinds of Klingons. And I kind of do like the idea of these guys getting away from all of the hype, and they go there and they have to play basketball. I mean, they're there for one reason. And it's kind of nice, right. nice to kind of see that part of it. And, I mean, with both these kids too, they've both responded seemingly pretty well. And so, I mean, I do think that has helped them quite a bit.
From an agent, from a marketing standpoint, take off a basketball hat, put on a sort of ads, money making, shoes and whatever. Do you think playing in the NBL, being that part of that narrative of the story is, oh, they've come from an international program, they've been the first to kind of not turn their back on college but take a different route. Do you think that has will improve their brand internationally and domestically, or how do you see that plan up?
You know, I domestically here, I don't think there's a big effect, at least positively. I mean, like, for example, if Zion Williamson had gone to Australia last year, I think his marketability would have been less than it was actually with him going to Duke. But the one thing that is interesting with guys going to Australia is that it opens up the door for them to sign shoe deals right away, which RJ did. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, LaMelo hasn't yet, but he likely will. And so, I mean, you know, you kind of start things off a year earlier. And so, I mean, you're kind of getting a whole nother year of legitimate money coming through the door. And in most cases, you know, outside of there being a guy like LeBron James, which, you know, comes around, what, every 10, 20 years, there's really not a ton of marketing opportunities until the draft. And even when there is, it's usually a shoe deal and a trading card deal, which are going to be there anyway. So as long as they're going there and their draft market value is solid, they're going to get those deals anyway. And so I don't see it being a huge difference maker.
Okay. My last question. It's sort of a broad arching question. I know you mentioned that you hadn't had a huge to do with Australia, but maybe you know people who have. We've just had two imports sign in the last couple of days and at the start of the season, all kind of things. What sort of is the process of getting a player to the NBL? Is an agent quite, are you aggressive in searching out as leagues as far afield as Australia, or do you get calls from Australia? Is it quite an aggressive, getting in contact with agents kind of league that you know of?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I have dealt with Australia quite a bit. So how it works there is pretty similar to how it works, or at least from my standpoint, how I operated with other countries throughout the world is, and I did it different ways at different times in my career, but it was either I was doing it direct, which in Australia, it's easier because everybody speaks English as their primary language.
Right.
And so the accessibility to the coaches and the general managers, it's easier than dealing, say with a team in France, where the accents are thick. And even if they do speak English, it's still, kind of get lost in translation a little bit, a lot of times. And there's times where I did it directly. And it does seem like a lot of the coaches are very involved with putting together the teams, which is not always the case with international teams. It'd either be a deal where I'm reaching out to the teams, giving them my list of players, they would let me know who they're interested in, or they would reach out there on their own and want to talk about players, or I would collaborate with another agent that would do that for me. And that's pretty standard with how things work with international basketball in all these countries. So nothing out of the ordinary with Australia on that front.
Are they quite like? I mean, obviously it depends on player to player and agent to agent and team to team. But is the conversation quite a blunt one of like, we need this player, here's what we've offered, hang up, goodbye? Or is there a little bit more of a talk, a bit more salesmanship on the part of the NBL general managers or coaches?
I think this goes back to just international basketball in general. Pretty similar. The one issue with Australia is just they would really, as part of the sell generally is selling, the quality of life, the quality of the basketball, over than the budget. And, like most businesses, the money usually talks, and so players a lot of times would want to take a bigger deal somewhere else. And that seemed to be a big issue with import players there. That's just generally my impression of we always had negotiations with all of those teams. I didn't do a whole lot of deals just because each isolated situation just ended up deciding on a different team.
I've got one last question for you. Actually, we brought it up. Amare Stoudemire, he's 37 years old. He's training in South Florida. He's looking to make a comeback to the NBA. As an agent, as a sort of, if you put your NBA GM hat on, is there any hope of that?
Sorry, can you say that one more time?
Amare Stoudemire is working out in Florida to come back at 37, having been in the NBA and gone away. Do you see any merit in a player of that age? Like, if you're his agent, are you tapping him on the shoulder saying, you know what, maybe let's look at other avenues? Or what do you think about him?
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen Amare in years. I don't know where he's at physically. He's a physical freak. So I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he was able to still be effective. I can't imagine him being at a level where he's able to make money that would put a dent into his net worth. But if that's what he wants to do, more power to him.
Yeah, good point. I guess that's all I've got. My last question is quickly: Next Stars program. It's trying to get guys like LaMelo Ball and Hampton. That'll probably change when the NBA changes its age draft. My first two-part question is: do you think that's likely on the part of the NBA? Do you think they're going to make that change? And secondly, what do you think the implication will be for Australia?
We had, two, 3 years or whatever where we thought it was a foregone conclusion that the age limit was going to, be waived. The rumblings I'm hearing now is that it's not as much of a sure thing. That for whatever reason, the players' union hasn't pushed it quite as much, and that now the owners have sort of talked, all right, well, if they're not willing to give up something significant for us, let's not just hand that over. And so, I don't know if that's just me sort of just hearing rumors, of the owners posturing or whatnot. But from my understanding, it's not a done deal. If they were to switch it, that certainly changes things quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, now all of a sudden they could turn that program into, 17-year-olds coming over though. I don't. I mean, that's, you have it in Europe where, you know, they sign these kids when they're 14, 15 years old. So, I mean, it definitely, the concept already exists within professional basketball. That would just be a decision for the Australian, the NBL to have.
One last question again. So we've got Didi Luzada, a guy who was drafted by the Pelicans and he's been stashed over here. Does that happen a lot? I mean, it seems to happen quite a lot in Europe, but we've had Didi come over to here. From an agent standpoint, looking at that, do you like that idea of taking a player away from his NBA team, or how do you take that?
Yeah, no, that's been the draft and stash concept has been going on for quite a while. I mean, pretty prevalent with European players. And I do like it. I mean, I think there's, for a player that's open to playing overseas, I think it's a good developmental opportunity for him. And for NBA teams, it allows them to draft players that they think have upside, but perhaps, gives them some flexibility on salary cap room. You know, because if they don't have to give him a contract now, they retain the asset without having to pay him. They could pay him later if he develops properly, or use it as a trade chip in future negotiations.
Makes sense. Matt, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. Have you got anything on your website that you'd like to talk about and get people involved from Australia?
As you sort of mentioned, I just started a series talking about my past life as a sports agent. I posted the second one yesterday, so there's two out. I'll be posting, probably do four or five of them total throughout the year. And just sort of, an inside look at my professional background, before I got to this point of scouting and doing media. And I'd love for your listeners to check it out.
Yeah, I've read it and I enjoyed it. It's a good read. It actually reminded me of Paul Shirley's columns from probably 10 years ago. Do you remember him as a player and a writer?
Yeah, no, I do. I read his book. Can I keep my jersey?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It is. What I would recommend to you, Matt, is Paul's actually got a podcast that I think he did a couple of years ago, but I've just discovered it, called Stories I Tell on Dates. Not so much related to basketball, but a little bit. Have a listen to that and see where you might, because it's really, the style of it is really good. And when I was reading your article, I was like, oh, this would play really nicely in a little bit of audio. But Matt, that's for you and your time.
Sure.
Really appreciate the time, Matt.
All right, thanks a lot.
Fun. Take it easy. Ciao.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And a reminder, like and subscribe and rate and review on Apple Podcasts if you feel the inclination. Thanks very much.